Welcome to the Royal Parks Coronation Cast, where we will be telling the story of the Royal Parks role in the coronation, which we are very proud to be hosting within the parks on the 6th of May 2023. Join Anna Barry and Scott Smith as they explore the history and tradition of coronations in the parks, past and present.
Hello, I'm Anna Barry and I'm a content producer at the Royal Parks.
And I'm Scott Smith, the Royal Parks social media manager.
We're really excited to be hosting this brand new podcast, taking you with us as we explore the Royal Parks role in coronations, both past and present.
We'll be going behind the scenes to hear from park staff, speaking with experts about our historic role in royal events, and bringing you all the highlights from the big day itself, when we'll invite you to join us right outside Buckingham Palace to hear the historic action unfold.
This time, though, we'll be looking back at previous coronations, exploring how the parks have been involved in these over the centuries, and we'll also be meeting someone who attended the last coronation in 1953.
When they came past, I mean, the gold carriage and the Queen, who was beautiful then, you know, we could see them so clearly, and they were smiling, and it was lovely.
Before we start looking ahead to the big day in May, we're going to start by looking backwards. The tradition of British coronations could be traced back more than 1,000 years. The first documented coronation at Westminster Abbey was that of William the Conqueror in 1066, but it was a long time until the Royal Parks began to play a role. Today, of course, the coronation procession will pass through the Royal Parks as it travels from Buckingham Palace to Westminster Abbey along the Mall, which is part of St James's Park. And a lot of people don't realise that the Royal Parks manage the Mall. Anna's been doing some digging to see if she can find out exactly when the parks began to be used. What can you tell us, Anna?
Well, the route of the coronation procession has changed a lot over the years, and at certain periods there actually wasn't much of a procession at all. So in the medieval period, it was tradition for the monarch to stay at the Tower of London before the coronation, and the day before the big event, they'd lead a procession through the City of London to Westminster. This was a tradition that lasted for hundreds of years, ending with the coronation of Charles II in 1661. After this, things changed. Coronations would begin at Westminster Hall, which is part of the Houses of Parliament today, and then move across the road to Westminster Abbey. This only involved a short procession, though, with limited opportunities for members of the public to get a glimpse of the action.
That's really interesting, Anna. So when did that change?
So this all changed with William IV. In 1831, he decided that his coronation would involve a procession from his palace to Westminster Abbey, but he wanted to do this in style, so he decided to make the journey in a golden coach.
That sounds very familiar, just like their majesties will do this year.
Exactly. So William IV was the first monarch to use the famous golden state coach, which is, as you've said, a tradition that continues today.
And did William's golden coach go through the parks?
Well, not quite. So he travelled from his residence at St James's Palace, which is on the edge of St James's Park, along Pall Mall, through Charing Cross and down Whitehall to the Abbey. There were lots of celebrations in the parks, though, and I've actually got something to show you here. A newspaper report from 1831, which was printed just after William's coronation.
So what does this say here? The fireworks in Hyde Park.
Yep, so this is a description of the big fireworks display that happened in Hyde Park on the evening of the coronation.
And you mentioned big because it actually says there could have been no fewer than between 18 and 20,000 present.
Yeah, and there's a good description of the fireworks just underneath here.
The anxiously wished for exhibition did not commence till past 9 o'clock, when a discharge of rockets announced the commencement of the display. This was succeeded by a grand discharge of bombs, Catherine wheels, blue lights, serpents and other descriptions of fireworks, which continued the exhibition for nearly 2 hours.
My favourite bit is the little bit at the end, which mentions that one of the rocket sticks perforated a lady's bonnet and she was only prevented from sustaining further injury by a comb in her hair.
This sounds like quite an event in the park for William. So there were celebrations in the parks, but still no procession through one.
That's right, not quite yet. So William was succeeded by his niece Victoria, whose coronation was in 1838. Now, this also involved a procession to Westminster Abbey, but this time the route was a little bit different because she lived not at St James's Palace, but across the park at Buckingham Palace.
And Victoria was actually the first monarch to live at Buckingham Palace, wasn't she?
She absolutely was, yes. And her procession ran from Buckingham Palace along the edge of the park. So she didn't go down the Mall. That wasn't actually there yet in its current form. Instead, she went west up Constitution Hill to Hyde Park Corner and then turned along Piccadilly to come back towards Westminster Abbey.
That's quite a way. There must have been a lot of people watching.
There certainly were. So crowds lined the whole of the route to cheer the young new queen, who wrote about the day in her diary, actually. And I thought you might like to see her account, Scott.
That's great. Let's have a look.
OK, so here I have her diary entry for Thursday, the 28th of June, 1838, which was the day of her coronation. And you can see she mentions one of the royal parks in the very first line.
Ah, that's right. Yes, it says, I was awoke at 4 o'clock by the guns in the park and could not get much sleep afterwards on account of the noise of the people, bands, etc., etc.
And she goes on to give a little bit more detail. She says, the park presented a curious spectacle, crowds of people up to Constitution Hill, soldiers, bands, etc. After this, after a description of her breakfast, she goes on to give a very detailed account of exactly what happened in the Abbey, what was put on her head when, all of the lords and ladies that were in attendance. And then when we get to the end of the entry, you can see she finishes her day with another mention of one of the royal parks. Can you see this line here?
Oh, yeah, I can. It says, stayed in the drawing room till 20 minutes past 11, but remained till 12 o'clock on my ma's balcony looking at the fireworks in Green Park, which were quite beautiful.
So her coronation day started and ended with noises from the royal parks.
So it sounds like there have been lots of celebrations in the parks.
There were. So when Victoria was crowned, there was a coronation fair in Hyde Park. And I've been having a look at some Victorian newspapers to see what exactly that involved. Lots of the accounts mention the weather. It was very, very rainy on the day. And also there's quite a lot of complaints that there weren't enough respectable refreshment booths. I think there were lots of not so respectable refreshment booths selling alcohol, but apparently there were only a few that were deemed respectable, and this meant that a Mr. Schmay of Kensington, who was selling coronation cakes and ices, was soon out of stock in Hyde Park. And it also mentions the celebration spilling down to Green Park, which was lined with vendors selling penny cigars and penny sandwiches, who stationed themselves all along the paths and reaped, it says here, a plentiful harvest.
Those sounded like some great celebrations in the parks in 1838, but still no procession along the Mall.
Not quite yet. So that came with the next coronation. This was in 1902 when Edward VII was crowned. His procession travelled from Buckingham Palace down the Mall to Westminster Abbey and back again afterwards, establishing the tradition that has continued ever since.
So actually, we have Edward VII to thank for this tradition, but we also have him to thank for the Mall itself, don't we?
We certainly do. So the Mall was part of a grand town planning scheme that he initiated to pay tribute to his mother, Queen Victoria. It was actually paid for by public donations that flooded in from around the world. They covered the cost of the Queen Victoria Memorial outside the palace, the flower beds that surround it, the gates into the Green Park nearby, and the remodelling of the Mall itself, which was reimagined as a grand processional route for state occasions like coronations. And the scheme also included Admiralty Arch at the end of the Mall, and there was enough money left over to refront the whole of Buckingham Palace. That's how much money they raised.
Wow, that's really interesting. So the tradition of coronation processions down the Mall began with Edward VII in 1902. And Charles III will be the fifth monarch to travel to his coronation in this way.
Yes, and even though there's been coronations in the UK for hundreds of years, traditions were always changing and evolving, as they did with the last coronation, which was, of course, the first to be televised.
That's right. The sales of TV went through the roof for the previous coronation. In fact, I was speaking to my nan about this, and she recalled that her family purchased a new TV just to watch the Queen's coronation. Mm-hmm. With the whole street crowding round trying to watch it.
Ah, that's lovely. I've heard lots of people say similar. And of course, the film footage, which I'm sure we've all seen, isn't the only record of this momentous occasion. The government commissioned an incredible series of paintings capturing preparations for the coronation and the big day itself.
To find out more, we walked across St James's Park to visit curator Lara Popoviciu of the Government Art Collection, which is situated at the end of the Mall.
The Royal Parks are here for everyone and open for all to enjoy. Help protect them by giving a donation to the Royal Parks charity today, as we continue to care for these vital green spaces for you and future generations to enjoy. Donations can be made via our website, royalparks.org.uk.
Oh, wow, look at that.
That's definitely one for you, Scott. A military ship.
Absolutely.
But there must be a few hundred paintings in here. How many rooms like this are there in the building?
4 rooms.
4, wow.
Wow, and we're here at the Government Art Collection. I mean, can you tell us a little bit more about what the organisation does?
Sure, and welcome. The Government Art Collection is a unique collection of British art that is on display in UK government buildings and British embassies around the world. There are nearly 15,000 works in the collection in a range of media, from paintings, sculptures, prints, drawings, watercolours and video art. And the earliest works date from the 16th century through to the present day. And with these displays, we support cultural diplomacy and the work of ambassadors and ministers. And we highlight connections between the UK and the host country through the works of art.
So we're wondering, what was the aim of the commission of all of these paintings for the coronation, and what sort of artists were involved?
According to David Eccles, Minister of Works in 1953, the main purpose of the coronation commission was to get as many competent artists as possible into positions on the route where they might sketch, since he wanted to have as large a record as possible of the coronation. Looking through the 1953 files, it emerges that Eccles had 2 categories of artists in mind, the more established ones and a few students from the Royal College of Arts. Among them were Dame Laura Knight, Felix Topolsky, Julian Trevelyan, Lawrence Stephen Lowry, Carol Waite and Edward Sego. They received an artist fee ranging from £10 to £50 a seat, and a fee in return for 1 oil painting or a few watercolours or sketches. In Lowry's case, the minister was ready to offer £100 for his oil painting and made sure he had a good seat. Lowry had a ringside view which allowed him to sketch the unfolding scene with his distinctive matchstick figures and eye for detail. Typically, he arrived at Buckingham Palace a lot later than his designated time of arrival of 6 o'clock in the morning. He wore a raincoat and drew nothing on the day. During the procession, he found himself distracted by the crowd. He recounted, "Some excellent incidents took place, which fascinated me, but not, I should imagine, what the Ministry of Works want." Later, he confessed that he returned the next morning to do a few sketches, though he still had no idea what he would paint. "It will sort itself out," he said. He did eventually sort the painting out 2 months after the coronation.
I have to wonder what the excellent incidents were.
that's really interesting. So why do you think they felt it was important to capture on canvas the setup and the parks from that time?
The 1953 coronation was the first one to be fully televised, giving access to millions in the UK and around the world, and having the monarch at the centre of the event. The focus of the coronation works was to offer a kaleidoscopic, complementary view and to capture the most interesting and vivid details pertaining to the event. At the same time, they are a visual record of a historical moment and allow us, more than anything else, to reconstruct the atmosphere on the day and experience it through the artist's lens, whether that's through a rapid, unfinished sketch or a more elaborate, finished painting. Whenever I look at these works, I'm fascinated by the artist's sense of observation and ability to capture unusual details, from the construction of the arches on the Mall, to the cleaning of the Admiralty Arch, to decking the streets with bunting and flags. Others show crowds during the persistent rain. A man even revives himself with a tot of whiskey, while those beside him shiver in top hats and furs. It all culminates with a splendid firework display and a festive celebration into the night. The procession route included 3 royal parks, St. James's Park, Green Park and Hyde Park. If we look carefully, the backdrop of the parks appears in many of the paintings, allowing us to understand how important the setup was. The return route of the procession was 7.2 kilometres long and lasted 2 hours, in order for as many people as possible, mostly emerging from the parks, to witness the coronation.
So where are all of these paintings located today?
The works are located in UK government buildings and British ambassadors' residences around the world. These include Paris, Helsinki, Geneva, Vienna, Warsaw, Washington, New York, and Montevideo. This widespread only gives a small insight into the scale the collection operates on.
With such a large collection, and this might be a hard question, but do you have a favourite?
I do. Why don't we go downstairs and have a look at it?
Oh, wow, look at that. That's fantastic.
Wow. And what is that? I mean, this isn't a painting, is it? This looks like a screen.
It is a three-part screen by painter, illustrator and theatre designer Roland Pym. It's got an incredible title. It's called Imaginary View of Windsor Castle and Virginia Water, the young Queen Victoria riding with a prince concert. So it's this fantastical piece of trompe-l'oeil which was commissioned at the request of the Minister of Works for Queen Elizabeth's retiring room in the annex of Westminster Abbey, where Her Majesty lunched after the coronation ceremony. It shows this imaginary view of Windsor Park and Virginia Water with all these details such as ruins, the cascade, George IV's fishing temple, even a floating balloon, and a heron with a fish in its beak, deer, a butterfly, all these imaginary details which Roland Pym depicted in his three-part screen.
You can really see that detail, can't you? It's fantastic.
Yes, and if you look closely, in the foreground is the young Queen Victoria on a white horse accompanied by the Prince's consort. Nearby is a pony cart with this corgi. It's an anachronistic detail hinting at Queen Elizabeth's love of dogs, and in particular corgis, which have become an internationally recognised symbol of her reign.
Absolutely. And it's quite interesting that the screen shows Queen Victoria as well, because there are some interesting parallels between her reign and the reign of Elizabeth II.
Absolutely. So when I look at this piece now and I understand its purpose at the time, knowing that Queen Elizabeth must have seen it and hopefully admired it, I view Roland Pym's work as a piece that is part of the history of the coronation. At the same time, it acted like an arch over time, inadvertently predicting the future by connecting the two longest-serving monarchs in British history, Queen Victoria and Queen Elizabeth II. They both inherited the crown somewhat unexpectedly, and they both celebrated Diamond Jubilees.
And you can just see in the corner there, can't you, the 2nd of June 1953, so 70 years ago.
Well spotted.
And just out the corner of my eye, I spotted another piece of work on the table there, and it looks very familiar.
Yes, this is actually another favourite work of mine in the collection from the same coronation series. It's a drawing by Bernard Philip Batchelor, and it's called Coronation Preparations, Cleaning Admiralty Arch. And it shows us really unusual details of the preparations for the coronation, with all these figures climbing up the ladder and cleaning the arch.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one for us to see, because we know that exactly these kind of preparations are underway at the park ahead of the coronation just a few weeks away. So it's fascinating to see that obviously the staff back then had the same preoccupations as we do today, making sure that the statues are shining, all of the landmarks are looking their best.
And it really shows that time marches on, but some things don't change.
And it's really interesting to see that all these preparations have been recorded by artists for future generations, and we can look back at these works as well as artworks, but also as historical documents.
Well, thank you very much, Laura. It's been wonderful to see these items. Anna and I have had a great morning, and we really look forward to seeing these in future.
We've talked about the event, but what was it really like to be in the parks watching the coronation in 1953? Well, to give you that answer, we went to speak to somebody who was actually there. Visit the Royal Parks website at royalparks.org.uk. Here you'll find in-depth information on all of the green spaces we manage, details of upcoming events, and suggestions around how you can get involved with our work.
In 1953, Jane MacDonald watched the coronation procession of Queen Elizabeth II from the edge of Hyde Park. We went to meet Jane at her daughter's house in London, where she shared her memories with us over a lovely cup of tea. Jane, thank you so much for having us. So, why did you decide to head to the Royal Parks to see the coronation?
The morning before the coronation, we felt we better go and sort of see where we wanted to be. And so we went on the tube to... wherever I got off and went, walked down Park Lane and found a rather good patch opposite the Dorchester, and we had our back to Hyde Park. And so then we thought, well, how are we going to keep this spot? So three of us went, well, I didn't, Douglas and I stayed and looked after the spot while the three of them went looking for things to make ourselves more comfortable, because we hadn't sort of got anything. And I wish I could remember better what they came back with. They must have got something to sort of put underneath. And I think they got sort of two sleeping bags, which was a bit of a tight squash for five of us. And the whole thing was really uncomfortable. But anyway, they went where they got that. And when they came back, Douglas and I went back to the flat, and I made stacks and stacks of sandwiches and flasks of tea and so on. It's funny, I was thinking, today we concentrate on water, you must have water. I don't remember us taking any water. It's extraordinary. And the night was not very comfortable, but it was fun because you could hear all the other people chatting around you. I mean, when we went back and we're all together and sort of made our pitch as well as we could, obviously, we were very close to lots of people. I mean, it was filling up fast. And sort of just lying there and listening to other people's conversations is really very funny. And we enjoyed it, I think. And also, we were all so excited, that's the thing. I mean, we were young, and it was the whole thing was wonderful.
Not many people can say that they've slept on Park Lane overnight. Or maybe at the Dorchester, but not.
I can remember, it must have been about midnight, I suppose, probably when the next day's papers were coming out. And I remember the newspaper men shouting, "Everest conquered, Everest conquered." And of course, it was that night that we heard that they'd climbed, Edmund Hillary and Sherpa Tenzing. Yeah. And so, that was lovely. And anyway, after that, somehow we got to a bit of sleep.
So you spent all night on the edge of Hyde Park. The sun's finally coming out. Then what happened next?
When we got up in the morning, it was okay. It was very drizzly, not very marvellous. You don't feel your best when you've been sleeping on a pavement all night. But anyway, we did get up. And I know one or two people in the crowd went into Hyde Park and at the big fountain, they cleaned their teeth. We didn't do that. No, I'm afraid we didn't. And so... then it was a question of sort of waiting to see what happened. And it's a shame it wasn't a lovely sunny day. I mean, it was just not.
Everyone was waiting to see that famous golden carriage, but there were thousands of other people filing past in the procession before the Queen arrived. So who else do you remember seeing?
One person I do remember was the Queen of Tonga. And she sat in a completely open carriage and pouring rain and smiling and sort of doing this to the crowds who loved her, of course. I mean, she was absolutely marvellous. And I've always remembered her. I remember the Marines going past, and they always look fantastically smart with their navy uniforms and white hats. But the trouble was that in the rain, their white hats, but all the blanco from their hats were coming down their backs. So it rather spoiled the effect. But it's so stupid, the little things you remember.
What was the atmosphere like when the Queen finally came past?
Oh, it was tremendous. I mean, the whole country had been getting excited about this, and especially people our sort of age, we were young. And it was terrific atmosphere. Of course it was, yes. We saw what we'd been waiting for go past, and everybody loved it, yeah. It seems strange to say it now, but we didn't think we'd ever see another one because she was so young. Mm-hmm. But of course, she lived so long that now we are going to see another one.
What about seeing five monarchs? If I work that out right, you're in a select group of people there, aren't you?
Yes, it's true.
And when you consider one reigned for 70 years and you've seen five, that's quite a...
It's quite
extraordinary, isn't it?
Yes. Because I can't believe it when you put it like that. It's extraordinary.
Where will you be watching the upcoming coronation?
Well, probably from my in sofa at home in Norwich, watching it on telly.
Wasn't she wonderful?
She was, and that's given us a great idea of what it was like in the Royal Parks on that day in 1953.
Next time, join us as we take a look at what it takes to prepare the parks for a royal event like the coronation.
We'll be going behind the scenes to talk to park staff, getting ready for the big day, and taking you with us on a walk down the Mall as we point out the landmarks you might spot on Saturday the 6th of May.
We hope you'll join us next time.
This podcast is part of a mini-series produced by the Royal Parks to mark the coronation of Their Majesties King Charles III and the Queen Consort. The podcast was edited by Jack Sheeran and produced by Anna Barry, Scott Smith and Emily Brett.